Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, a show about data networking. And today we've got a sponsored show with SolarWinds, who is a network monitoring company that many of you have heard of and are somewhat familiar with. And if you haven't, you are in for a treat. They are a full-featured network monitoring company covering all of the silos in your IT. And we'll be focused a bit today on the network performance monitor platform. Now, Mr. Greg Farrow is with me, my co-host from the UK, who is now no longer in internet bandwidth poverty. He is among the wealthiest in the world.
Yes. And can you hear my dulcet tones enhanced by increased bandwidth?
More bandwidth is better, and I can hear every nuance of your wonderful dulcet voice.
All right. Well, I will have to be good then and not tap on the keyboard too hard so it doesn't feed back into the mic. But yes, I am Greg Farrow, of course, from the Ethereum My Blog. And I'm excited to be back talking about network monitoring. If you've been following along, you know that I get a bit of a nerd hard-on for network monitoring and management and getting visibility into the network. And you're going to see a lot more of network monitoring this year because there's a massive, big set of tools changes coming. And I'm excited to hear what SolarWinds is going to bring to us in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, Greg, good to hear from you. And I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. And let's introduce our guest from SolarWinds, head geek, Mr. Leon Adato. Leon, would you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers folks?
Hi there, everyone. Yeah, this is Leon, and I'm with SolarWinds. I'm one of the newest head geeks. There's actually seven of us running around, a couple overseas, and five of us here in the States. And you can find me and my mad ramblings either on thwack.com, that's SolarWinds' community-sponsored, community-run environment, as Adato L-E, or also I tweet more than occasionally as Leon Adato. And I'm here to talk about the things that make Greg Farrow happy in his pants, amongst other places, network monitoring.
Oh, boy. Well, okay. So, Leon, you and I had a chat last week kind of preparing for this show. And one of the big points about network monitoring that you wanted to drive home is the cost of network monitoring. Could you open up the topic for us? What does that mean to you, the cost of monitoring?
Absolutely. So, you know, as you said, monitoring is going to become bigger this year. I think it's been growing in terms of awareness for companies, but I still hear a lot in, you know, my consulting business and in the past that, well, you know, monitoring is a really nice to have, but it doesn't do anything for us. It's slightly more sexy than auditing in terms of what it returns the business, and it's simply not true. The cost of monitoring comparatively is minimal, and the cost of not monitoring can be huge. One of the stories I love to tell is about a hospital. I won't go the long form version of it, but you know, this hospital decided that $5,000 to monitor, believe it or not, of all things, their kitchen and the coolers in their kitchen just wasn't worth it. You know, $5,000 fully installed cost that would let them know when things were getting a little too cold. They were having some losses because food was freezing over. And again, to make a long story short, they had the compressor fail, the doors were open, and in one night, without knowing, you know, what was going on, they lost over $1 million in terms of staff costs to get the food remade, you know, repurchasing food and everything. So they missed out on saving. And it was one of those things where sometimes people, when they talk about monitoring, will say, you know, oh, well, you know, we still would have heard about it. We only would have heard about it a half hour later or whatever. No, in this case, they wouldn't have heard about it. And had they heard about it, they would have saved all $1 million of that.
Yeah. For the sake of, so they saved 5,000 and lost a million.
And they lost a million. So they you know, net loss, you know, 900 and, you know, $95,000. That'll look good on the books. So they saved themselves, you know, it was a $995,000, you know, net loss. I'm sure that'll look really good on the books. So that's the point, is that, first of all, having monitoring in place will help you save, you know, money in terms of events, but also it's going to help you in terms of the things that you'll find out about. You know, another example of monitoring gone right is the fact that your sophisticated monitoring, which is not expensive and it's not, you know, you have to have the top of the line tools. It's just, you know, monitoring done thoughtfully is where, you know, instead of sending out the simplistic, you know, CPU alert, you know, hey, tell me when CPU is at 95%. Well, you know, when I have a server sized correctly and it's doing what it's supposed to be doing and it's running consistently at 95%, I call that correctly sized. You know, I don't call that
you're
bad.
You're maximizing the what you've got there. You don't want it idling long because then you're just throwing CPU cycles away that aren't working for you. You want it to be working good. Yeah. So it's not just monitor high utilization. It's, you know, monitor high utilization under certain circumstances.
Exactly. So, you know, the days of wanting to see that CPU at a nice low 50% because it makes me feel good are gone. You know, virtualization is part of it, but not all of it. So with sophisticated monitoring, you can do things like, and these are the things that I talk about as head geek, monitoring the number of CPUs along with the number of jobs in the processor queue, meaning the jobs that are waiting to be serviced, and the CPU utilization, so that you only trigger an alert when the number of jobs waiting in the queue is more than the number of CPUs you have on the box and CPU is high. And all of that exists for more than, say, 15 minutes. At that point, that's actionable. And that's another thing that people miss when they're talking about monitoring and thinking that it doesn't have any cost is, you know, they'll set up a ping alert. You know, well, it missed one ping. Great, it missed one ping. Thank you very much. Go home.
You can drop a ping for just about anything. It could be the networking stack being overloaded. It could be the CPU spiking. It could be the app actually hogging, you know, app hogs. It could be all sorts of things. There's no diagnostic information there.
It could be the switch doing, I don't know, its job, passing packets for a minute.
Yeah. Or it might be going through a firewall, which deprioritizes ICMP because that's usually DDoS related. You don't care.
Right. Right. Mm. So, you know, when monitoring is set up, you know, not thoughtfully, that's when it has the appearance of not having a value. But you can see where having monitoring done well can not only, you know, save your bacon, but it can actually save the company money. And this goes beyond the fault side of, you know, the FCAPS model, where, you know, you can also talk about monitoring for capacity. Tell me when my hardware is going to be, you know, when I'm going to hit a bandwidth limit, when I'm going to hit a disk or a RAM, consistent RAM limit, you know, tell me about that. Help me predict those kinds of things.
Exactly. Yeah. The days of red light, green light, and reacting to bad things that have already happened, that doesn't really help you a lot. At least you know what happened or you have some idea of what happened. But you really want to be out in front of those events and see the things that are predicting a failure that is coming so that you can prevent the failure from happening at all. Again, if you don't do that, there's a cost there.
So you hit another piece, which is the preventative piece. You know, don't tell me when the plane crashed. I mean, yes, monitoring has to do that. But tell me when the plane is at 30,000 feet, but it's nose down 45 degrees so I can send someone to go wake the pilot. That's what I really want to have happen is that problem avoidance. You know, for example, in a monitoring context is, you know, tell me when CPU is high and bandwidth is high and the number of connections in the web server are also high, you know, over a certain amount so that I can spin up another instance on the load balancer.
Right. You know, so you're talking there about correlation. You're actually trying to say it's not enough just to monitor each device alone. There's no point in monitoring the firewall and then the web farm and then the load balancer. What you've got to say is if all three of these elements, you know, and there might be 20 web servers, you might have five load balancers and you might have, you know, multiple 10 gig pipes to the ISPs, you need to be able to correlate all of those events together to turn them into something meaningful in your specific situation.
Precisely. And the other point I can't underscore enough is that it's becoming possible to do that affordably. You know, back to the cost piece is that people say, oh my gosh, you know, that would cost me, you know, 10 staff members and I'd have to spend $1 million a year. No, you won't. No, really, you don't. It's very doable with a variety of tools. Yes, of course, I'm going to say SolarWinds here. But the fact is that it's doable with minimal staff, without having people who have to have a PhD in this. It's achievable.
There's legacy that comes from, though, because there's a lot of tools that were that. You know, the multi-hundred thousand or million-dollar installs with training and people you had to dedicate to it. That is, you know, you go back to the old days of the great big framework solutions, and that's what you were getting into.
Well, and you don't have to go back. I mean, those tools are still out there, and I typically make fun of them in meetings and calls and sales calls and things like that. But, you know, the fact is it's not necessary anymore.
Right.
And that's the point. So the cost of monitoring covers, you know, all of that. And then one more piece that I want to emphasize is that the reason why monitoring can save you money is because if you're monitoring it, you're already there. do something about it. Automatically respond. You know, the simple example is, you know, when the disk is getting full, clear your temp drives and your log files. And, you know, like, I can dump those with a script or with an automatic action. If a service has stopped, well, try to restart it. And then if it hasn't started, now cut a ticket. Now wake somebody up at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I know one organization that enabled just simple disk automation. You know, the disk was full, and it you know, and the alert would go out and say, hey, the disk is full, and inevitably the technician would get on, and he'd clear the drive, and that would fix it. So we set up, you know, an automatic response, and the ticket volume dropped by, I'm not making this up, 150%. Over time, which means that human beings, A, got more sleep, you know, they weren't being woken up, B, they had time to do other things, and C, the most valuable for me as a monitoring engineer, they didn't look at the alerts they were getting as noise. They didn't think every time their pager went off or their phone went off or their email rang or whatever it was, they didn't think, oh, it's going to be nothing. You know, this is going to be a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. And they deprioritized that. Now, when they got, you know, alerts, they knew, oh my gosh, this is real. You know, another example was, you know, we turned on monitoring for Exchange, which is a whole host of things, you know. But the number of actual tickets we cut dropped from 80 a month to 8 a month. Because we put in intelligent, more efficient, intelligent monitoring. Well, now when the Exchange engineers get, you know, get that alert, they're all over it because, you know, we're not nagging them for nothings. So that's, you know, that's a sense of how.
So this comes back to a common discussion that we've had on the show over the last 6 months to a year, is that software is accelerating, and the features and the functionality that software can bring to the table is accelerating away from where we used to be. Things that we couldn't do 5 years ago, like the best we could manage 5 years ago at reasonable pricing, you know, in, you know, the medium-sized company was red-green. And then the operator had to intervene and then apply local knowledge, local competency to tell you, interpret what the red-green, you know, like read the tea leaves of red-green alerts and say, oh, that's the load balancer. Right, you know,
Precisely.
And so software's come a long way in the last 5 years. I mean, software development, the software tools, you know, the baseline, like SolarWinds has, you know, 5 years ago you were producing network performance monitor. Now it's a whole plethora of tools around it. It's not just, you know, the network monitoring. You've got the whole suite of stuff, NetFlow, logging management, IDS monitoring, security monitoring. And that just shows you the fact that SolarWinds can come out with those tools is sort of a reflection of how not only the SolarWinds is growing, but it's also a reflection of the tool chains becoming so simplified, so much easier to develop and maintain software compared to where we were 5 years ago, that there's now a whole new way of looking at network management and monitoring. That's how I see it anyway.
Well, no, that's a very good point, and you're exactly right. I would say, you know, SolarWinds has had those modules for, you know, more than 5 years. NetFlow has been around for a while, and even the voice over IP monitoring that's existed. However, I think it's a combination of the ongoing sophistication of those tools, as well as because of the sophistication, because of the ease of use that's there, more and more IT pros are becoming aware of it. You know, I remember going back to 2009, 2006 even, you know, seeing tools that were doing NetFlow. And again, tea leaves, you know, I mean, you had to sacrifice a goat and swing a cat around a tree at midnight to figure out what these things were telling you. And you needed to be a hair on the knuckles network pro to really understand what NetFlow was all about.
On the knuckles.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I've dealt with some of those great big NetFlow aggregators, and they're great at collecting all the data and giving you lots of graphs. But to make use of that data is a time-consuming process to dig through, find out what all these traffic patterns actually mean, and then what's actionable about that, you know, other than it being a curiosity.
Right, and what's happened in recent years is that the charts, the graphs, the displays have become much more readable. Now you can say, oh my gosh, you know, that's George, and he's watching Hulu, and that's pegging my circuit. So, you know, you can see that that's going on, and that in turn makes more technicians aware of it as a tool that can help solve actual real life problems, and that in turn drives the demand for it. So it's all, in my opinion, it's all good.
Well, now, we were just talking about SolarWinds NPM, the Network Performance Monitor tool, which is one of several that work together as a great big suite, if you want, NPM being, I would say, the tool within the SolarWinds war chest that engineers are most familiar with. It's got your it's really an SNMP element monitoring tool with a fairly complex and robust alerting engine where you can write a number of detailed alerts and triggers and that respond in various ways to various events that are on the network. Now, you guys have been developing this product, NPM, and developing it pretty consistently with new releases, and it's been a little bit since I've run NPM. I was running it back in the 9. I was managing a SolarWinds install when it was NPM 9X and then took it up through 10X, and now we're into release 11.5. And with
that's
this
right.
Release,
it just,
Leon,
it just came out.
Yeah, you got a whole bunch of new features and functionality that you've baked into this thing. You want to start talking through some of that?
Absolutely. I'm ecstatic for this. Just a quick background. I've been using SolarWinds, among other tools. I mean, I've used, you know, from the competitors also, because, you know, I'm not a big believer in homogeneous monitoring. I think that you have to have a heterogeneous environment to have, you know, a sense of sanity. But I've been using SolarWinds since about 2003. So that takes me back to, I think, either 7 or 8. And, you know, using it in different environments, everything from, you know, a few hundred devices up to several thousand devices. And 11.5, the development just continues to blow me away. Some of the things that we are able to put in there and pull out. And, you know, for example, you mentioned that NPM is an SNMP based tool. And I agree with you. It is predominantly SNMP, simple network management protocol for those people who are playing, you know, buzzword bingo or, you know, alphabet soup. But it also collects data from devices using WMI, Windows Instrumentation. Mm-hmm. And it also will take your VMware credentials and it will pull out all of your VMware stuff. In fact, just, you know, NPM by itself, no extra modules, will give you a view of things, for example, when vMotion occurs, when you have a VM that moves from one host to another host in a cluster, in a data center, you'll be able to see that all within the tool, and it uses the VMware API. So we're building in a lot of different APIs methods to get information. And, you know, for example, when we made the leap from 10 to 11, you know, and our marketing campaign was right on top of it, this one goes to 11. We
Of course we did.
So when we went to 11, the big thing was deep packet inspection, quality of experience, which everyone sort of said, you know, they give the German Shepherd look and like, well, what does that mean? And what it means is that we're actually able to collect effectively Wireshark type information, packet captures, and get timings, you know, so you can find out. Assume the application is slow. Assume that the user is saying, this is slow, and you believe them. I know it's crazy talk, but you believe them. Now you have to figure out, is it because of a network issue that's going on, or is it because the application server itself is slow? And sometimes, you know, is it because the application server is tricky because the application server is salesforce.com or something like that? So how do you know? Well, you know, deep packet inspection uses a couple of different timings to figure out, you know, either time to first byte, or it actually looks at the TCP/IP two-way authentication and checks the timing, you know, just like you would be doing, actually doing the math in your head, looking over Wireshark, and it tells you, you know, this set of packets, this set of conversations, whether it's SQL or a conversation to YouTube or whatever, is slow because of network. Meanwhile, this other one, the network is just fine. This is an application issue. So that was in 11, and it was a big deal, and people are still wrapping their head around it. In 11.5, we kicked that up a notch by allowing NPM itself to automatically detect over 1,200, we're calling them applications. They're really sort of URL and port combinations so that you don't have to. In 11, you had to say, I want to find out about conversations with, you know, Google Drive and Dropbox and my customer relationship management tool in-house, but I don't really care about Hulu or whatever it is, right? Look at me! I'm giving all this free advertising to vendors. Hopefully, you guys can monetize this in some way.
It's interesting, right? Is that the thing about network monitoring and analytics? And I mean, we're going to talk about analytics and visibility a little bit further down the thing, but is the principles remain the same for the entire industry? Because to some extent, you're only as good as your data sources. So you said earlier, you know, everything's focused on SNMP. And at the end of the day, you're only as good as SNMP makes your visibility tools to be.
Which is pretty darn good, I got to say. But you're right. You know, if you don't have other data sources, it's not going to – yeah, exactly. You're not you have to stay on the curve. And, you know, earlier we were saying that the software, meaning the monitoring software, has improved, but also the targets, the things we're monitoring, have improved. They've given, you know, vendors have given us more and more ways to get at this information. And you know, deep packet inspection is just one of those, you know, new techniques that we were able to automate and build into the tool.
Well, we couldn't do DPI. I mean, I remember 5 years ago, DPI was a multi-million dollar technology that required dedicated hardware and special priests with magic wands to come in and make it go.
Right.
Tell me I'm wrong, right? And, you know, I can and the companies that make that technology are now all dead, right? Because nobody wanted it. Everybody wanted DPI or wanted the visibility, but nobody wanted to have to route the traffic back to where the DPI hardware could be. And it was kind of pointless. And the secret to these tools is that now we're able to use the greater CPU or the new device, whatever it is, to get DPI at the edge on the WAN or in the core, wherever it needs to be. That's the significant change that makes these tools, you know, much better than we used to be. And also because we have the CPU power, we can actually inspect packets in x86 hardware and do a hell of a lot more than we could.
Right. And I will say that those you know, multi-thousand, multi-million dollar tools still exist, and they're still out there, and there's still application, the reason to apply them in different situations. I'm not trying to diss every other vendor on the planet. I mean, I it's funny, but it's also not true.
Everything has a use case.
Right, exactly.
Some of them are matchstick-sized. Some of them are sort of like a bit of 4B2, you know?
Right. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that those other tools, you know, are now made obsolete by NPM 11.5. But the fact is that we're bringing the entry point down to, you know, where small shops and medium-sized shops can enjoy some of the benefits of it also. So deep packet inspection was just one of the features that we improved in 11.5. But we brought in another tool that typically you can only find in, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, which is the wireless heat maps. Mm. You know, there are a couple of products out on the market that will do this, but they're typically an appliance. And once again, you have to have, you know, Xspectral wireless OSM. You know, you have to have, you know, people with wands and advanced degree from Hogwarts to figure it out. And now,
and again, the heat map, the whole idea is you've got a floor plan, you've got access points that are, you know, in the ceilings or in the walls, wherever you've done them. And the heat map tells you wireless signal strength based on that conforms to that floor plan. So you've got some idea of just what sort of coverage you've got. And then you can also map clients into that. So you can see utilization and these kind of things.
Right. And what it does actually is it uses the client responses. This is the part I think is absolutely brilliant, is it uses the client responses to figure out how your coverage is, because the clients are reporting back to the AP and the controller. It's saying, hey, my signal strength is 50 over here and whatever it is. So it's using the things that we can monitor, you know, that we can pick up from the devices, and using that as a feedback loop to say, oh, well, then this is a cool spot, this is a hot spot, this is a whatever. And the other thing that you don't have to do with the NPM feature is you don't have to do what I affectionately call dowsing for signal. You don't have to hold your laptop up and wander around, you know, trying to get you know, readings off of it. It's using your existing clients to get you those features.
Because there's that element that you can pull, which is, hey, how good is your signal strength to the access point? And the client tells you, you know what access point they're associated to, translated into a graphic.
Exactly. And it also serves one of my other nefarious purposes, which is the actual mapping of access points and devices in the environment. Mapping is a thankless, horrible, soul-sucking job that a lot of us have to do to keep our environments up to date. But by having this reason to do it, you know, having this wireless heat map, people are a little bit more excited about it. And what it means, and I had this experience recently, there's a hotel chain where a client of mine, you know, does the hardware support. And I was actually with them during training, and they're on the phone talking to a technician. We had the maps of every hotel location. We had the floor plan for each hotel, and we had put that into the SolarWinds, the mapping system. And so I'm on the phone and I'm saying, okay, go on the elevator, go up to the fourth floor. Okay, make a left, go down to room 403. Okay, look up. That one's broken. Because we had taken the time to map out, to place the access points on the floor plans, because we had to figure out what the signal strength was going to be. So that meant automagically that I had a map with a plan, and when one of those devices went out, I could see it. You know, I could see exactly where it was, which is always a fun trick to pull off. They're looking around for cameras. Can you see me? Is Alan Funt here? No, you're not on candid camera.
Yeah, you're about to get punked, man. Look out.
Right. Exactly. So wireless heat maps is an exciting feature. Another one, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but I'm sure we can spend some time talking about it, is duplex mismatch detection, which you still need in this day and age. So I'm going to ask you guys, like, how often do you guys or some of the listeners, like, how often does this still happen?
You know, Gigabit Ethernet made it a lot better because the defaults for Gigabit Ethernet are 1,000-fold. If you're not negotiating it, that's what you're supposed to fall back to. And it isn't that way with fast Ethernet, which is where I think the root of that problem came in, where one side would be auto-detect, the other side would be hard set. And so if you can't auto-detect, the default setting would be 100 halves. You'd have one side hard set to 100 full. The other side couldn't auto-negotiate sets to 100 half. Duplex mismatch. Yeah, it still happens. I mean, it's I think less than it was, but it's one of those things that when the problem's there, it's really bloody annoying, and it's super easy to fix most of the time. So if you can find those problems and fix them, it's an easy win.
Right. And these are one of those things where it's on by default. It automatically happens. And you automatically get alerts and you automatically see it on pages. And in some of the places where we were testing it, the testers were swearing up and down, was, oh, no, we got that all licked. We're fine. There was one customer that said, no, they put money on the table. And sure enough, we turned it on, 55 duplex mismatches, you know, connections. And all of a sudden you saw the text looking around like, oh, crap, that's what was wrong with that all this time. It's like, yup. So, again, you don't need to over-talk it, but it's one of those features that it's a long time in coming, and we have a feeling that it's going to create a flurry of fixes right away.
Now, how are you guys detecting that? Just curious, that because you can see both sides of the link and detect the duplex state and therefore is a mismatch, or do you infer it from things like frame check sequence errors and other sorts of things, late collisions that crop up when there's a duplex mismatch?
And the answer is yes. We do both of them. We're looking at the topology information because we're collecting that also. We're doing, CDP neighbor and, all the different techniques. And so if we're monitoring both devices, on both sides of the connection, then we can certainly see the characteristics of those interfaces because we're picking that up from, say, SNMP, which tells us, what duplex setting it's at and things like that. Mm-hmm. If we don't, then we are able to infer it. And we do mark. We say when it's a definite confirmed duplex mismatch versus a potential, because we're seeing, packet drops or, connection failures or, whatever it is, we're seeing those errors on the line. So, yes, we're using every trick in our, in our bag to try to find it out.
That's pretty key, because one of the places I see a real good use for this is on WAN circuits that are Ethernet handoffs. So your carrier is no longer just selling you 2-wire and 4-wire T1 circuits. They're selling you Ethernet handoffs in a lot of cases, particularly if you're in a colo, you're going to get an Ethernet handoff, right? So, Okay, while I know that a lot of these carriers, the way they ratchet you down to 100 megabit per second service is they'll manually set speed and duplex. They won't throttle it with a policer. They'll hard set your interface to 100 meg, even though it's very probably gigabit on the other end. Well, there's a situation where now you're back in that world of there's a potential for a duplex mismatch on a circuit that you really don't want. It's not just being a desktop. Now it's a critical WAN circuit for your infrastructure. You really want to be able to detect a duplex mismatch if you can, in case no one caught it when the circuit got turned up. And if you can infer it, or we suspect there might be a duplex mismatch here, even though you can't see the other end because it belongs to the carrier, that's a good thing. That's another win.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that carrier connections and, those circuits frequently have, first of all, the biggest impact. One single circuit can bring, a happy day to a sad day in remarkably, short time. But it's also the point where as network pros, you know, we spend most of our time. We want those circuits. Yes, the internal WAN, the internal LAN rather, is important, but it's those WAN circuits that you know, keep us awake at night. So that's another piece that is exciting. There's a lot of different elements in this version that are, you know, so much fun to talk about. I mentioned earlier capacity planning. So, you know, previously capacity planning and in a lot of monitoring tools, it's, you know, I collect the CPU utilization or I collect the bandwidth, and then on the graph, I just do a quick math thing and I draw a line that shows me the line is going generally up or generally down, and I calculate what your 90%, you know, 95th percentile is, and that's enough to figure out whether you're high, low, medium, or, you know, going up or going down. We've added a variety of new algorithms in here now for capacity planning so that it's figuring out that, yeah, there's a spike right now, but you spike every Thursday, you know, because that's your big report day, so you're using up a lot more disk space. And yeah. So, you know, we sort of level those out in the baselines, and now we're able to say with a much higher degree of confidence, you know, you are going to run out of capacity, you know, in 2 months, in, you know, in 5 days, in whatever it is. And capacity can be, you know, CPU and memory, which I know sounds interesting. But again, if you see a general trend and you see that generally you're at 80 and all of a sudden you're starting to creep up, then, you know, especially in this day of virtualized machines, throwing another CPU or two at the box isn't such a big deal. And you want to know ahead of time. The same thing for memory, the same thing for, you know, same thing for bandwidth. So we've added that piece in, and it's just automatically integrated into the existing charts, you know, just using the data that we're already collecting. So that's another piece that's fun. But by far and away, the most exciting piece for me was the change to the alerting engine in NPM 11.5. It was a 32-bit utility that sat on the polling server, on the SolarWinds server. Now it is web-based so that, yeah. So, you know, first of all, you can get more hands working on things, which is always good.
I spent a lot of quality time with that Windows-based tool, by the way. I'd RDP into the server, fire up the, you know, the Win32 tool, and yeah, I got right into those screens pretty heavy. So
right.
I'll miss it, and I won't. If I can do it all on the web now.
Well, it's still, you know what? It's still there. We didn't take it away. And so it, you know, it's still there for when you want it, but the web-based tool has some features that just blow the doors off. You know, first of all, the thing that really got me, and this gets into a series of blog posts that we've been putting up on Packet Pushers called the four questions of monitoring. There are, as a monitoring engineer, you get asked four questions fairly regularly, and you need to be ready for them. And by ready for them, I mean you have to have either tools or good habits in place. You know, one question is, why did I get this alert? You know, okay, and you have to be able to answer that. And the other one is, why didn't I get an alert? You know, I was supposed to and I didn't. And the third question that gets asked is, what's being monitored on my system? Now, that's more reporting than anything else. Is, you know, is this interface it monitored or not? Is this disk? Is this, you know, on the load balancers? Do I have this application pool or not? You know, those kinds of things. But the fourth question, the amazing fourth question is, what will alert on my system? I beg your pardon? Well, I have these, you know, routers and, you know, or Linux boxes or whatever they are, and I you said that you have 250 alerts in the system right now. I want to know which of those 250 alerts are going to trigger for my boxes. And that's challenging, especially when you think, you know, well, the alert triggers when the CPU is high. So I guess if the CPU is high, but it's not just that simple. It's when CPU is high, but the Windows alert for CPU is different than the Linux alert for CPU because the timing is different. And, you know, the router trigger time, you know, I want to know when a router CPU goes, you know, goes high with a different interval than, you know, say my AS400 or something like that. So I really do have different alerts. And what the new alerting engine, you know, web-based or not, but the new alerting engine does is it divides up your trigger into two parts. The first one is scope. So give me the Windows servers, you know, give me all the servers where the operating system includes the word window, and the network contains 10.199.5. So just that subnet. That's a scope. That has nothing to do with when to trigger. That just has to do with which boxes are in and which boxes are out.
Yep.
Then a separate query, a separate section says, okay, now what do you want to actually alert on? And that's where you would put in CPU or memory or bandwidth or, you know, whatever it is that you want to know about. The effect of that is because it's been split out, is now you have resources all over the place. You have on the details pages, on reports, whatever, where you actually can show this alert will trigger potentially for these 52 devices, you know, or, you know, this alert. And you can give that report. And that can be a really tricky thing to do in different tools if you don't have that sophistication. So that was really exciting to me because, you know, for years, you know, over a dozen years now, as I've been doing monitoring, that was one of the questions I've always had trouble answering.
And just for clarification, again, you mm-hmm. can do everything on the web that you could, that you, maybe you would have had to go to the Windows tool before. You're saying all the capability is there now on the on that web tool.
Absolutely. It's all there. So you can use one or the other, but you're going to want to use the web-based tool. Honestly, you're going to want to use the web-based tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So another piece that's just mind-boggling is that, you know, previously and in other tools, alerts had to be in a particular domain. Interface alerts could know about the CPU on the chassis, you know, or the box, but they couldn't know about, say, application. So I have the situation, right? You know, again, CPU is my favorite punching bag, you know, because CPU can be really stupid. Like, CPU is high. Great. Go away. But when CPU is high and my receive bandwidth is high and the number of connections I have to IIS are over, let's say, 150.
Like you're monitoring TCP connections that are actually standing up to the process.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and one more, and the IIS process itself is using more than 80% of the RAM.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's when I know I have a definable, actionable, like I said before, actionable event that I can get the application team involved to look at it and probably spin up another box. Or, you know, whatever it is. Like, whatever your action is, you know, that's a different thing. But previously in NPM and in other tools as well, trying to go across those domains, meaning, you know, that you have the application domain where you're getting the service, you know, the amount of RAM being used by a process and also the number of connections directly to that process and then also the interface information and then also the information about the chassis, about the CPU on the box. All those things you couldn't span. Well, now you can. You can set up, you can set up multi-part, you know, you using the word correlation before, and correlation means, you know, different things to different people. Sometimes it means when you see this thing on a router and this thing over here on the server, that's correlation. But also in this case, you're correlating multiple events across, you know, across the scope of a system, or honestly across the scope of multiple systems. So you can do that, and that's a big deal in this environment.
You were talking about all the, you know, the relating to systems and multiple systems and, you know, being able to define scope that way, which triggered something else in my mind that I see on this list, which is dependency mapping. Now, in the past, if something's down, you would have to manually go in and define, I don't want alerts from these 15,000 other things that are going to go down because this one linchpin device went down, you know, like a WAN router, and everything else behind it is going to go away when that WAN router goes down. Has that gotten any easier to deal with? I'm assuming it is, since we got a feature enhancement here.
So yeah, previously, in order to do what's called, you know, downstream suppression, upstream detection, however you want to phrase it, the idea is that in a very simplistic diagram, you've got a router connected to two switches, and those two switches are connected to 50 servers. And if the router goes down, I do not want to get, you know, 52 other alerts for the two switches and the 50 servers. Like, I don't want those. But because monitoring is always from a particular perspective, you know, it's from the perspective of the polling engine itself, whether you're talking agent-based or agentless, it doesn't matter. Something somewhere has to be watching those boxes and figuring out up or down. Because of that, you could very easily trigger, you know, 53 alerts, one for the router, which you wanted, and 52 for the other things. So in this case, you want to do what's called parent-child relationship. The router is the parent of the switches are the parents of the servers. I know that switch A is the parent of these 25 and switch B is the parent of these 25. That's the situation we're talking about. Using the topology information I mentioned before that we get, you know, CDP neighbor and all the rest of it, we know the topology. We've been doing topology since, I think, the release of version 10. We've been getting it and we've been inserting it into different screens. But having it and then using it are two different things. So in this case, in this version, we are now automatically setting up these dependencies so that when a device becomes, you know, is listed as down, we automatically check the state of the listed parent for that device. And if that that parent device is down, then the child device is listed as unavailable, which is very different than down. Mm. Now, you can get alerts on unavailable. You can certainly find out about unavailable, but there's a different criticality to that. So we're doing that automagically now. And it's wonderful because between the improved mapping that we're able to do with that topology information, you can alert on unavailable, but that's a very different kind of criticality than if something is actually down. So you have that choice, but automagically we are tagging things, you know, with the parent child so that when something, you know, upstream is down, you just don't get those other alerts. So that's very exciting for us. And again, one of those things where a lot of people have wanted it for a while.
So let me throw a more complex scenario at you. You know, a lot of servers are dual homed to two different switches. Can you handle that sort of a multi-dependency?
Right. Well, you know, again, that's the nice part about when monitoring is directional is that from the perspective of the thing doing the monitoring, the polling engine, the device would have to be down in order to know. So if you have multi-homed, you can mark a parent as you can mark for the parent a group of devices, meaning, you know, it's not that, you know, switch A is in charge of 25 and switch B is in charge of 25, but switch A and B, which are load bound, you know, which are actually cross connected,
yep,
you know, are all in charge of all 50. And that would, yeah, okay, that would be a different thing. Now, whether or not NPM would detect that automatically, that it was cross connected and things, sort of depends on your configuration. It's, I will say it's possible, but even if it's not, you can go in and then tune things up. But, you know, now you're talking about tuning up an existing parent child, you know, relationship that's been preset for you versus having to do all of it, yeah, manually.
Right.
Which, build all, you know, it's, yeah, it's the difference between minutes and hours of your life, you know, trying to tune or tweak things a little bit. So, yeah, that's one that we're excited about as well, definitely.
So, Leon, let me lead you in with one more question here that's kind of – it's something I know isn't core to NPM necessarily, but I'm interested in asking about it anyway because it's more the way IT is starting to think. You know, IT has been traditionally broken up into a lot of different silos. You got the storage people, and you got the virtualization people, you got the network people, and, you know, and on and on and on it goes. Well, a lot of shops are coming around now and thinking less in terms of silos and more in terms of, hey, we got a team of people here to deliver an application to the business, and we need to be working together more and focusing more about how that application is and what the service levels are and so on, no matter what the underlying root cause problem might be if there is a performance problem. How is SolarWinds dealing with that kind of a mindset?
Well, I talk a lot about, you know, abolishing the silos. And I know lots of people talk about abolishing silos for, you know, organizational reasons or whatever. But from a monitoring standpoint, it's especially difficult for what you just named, is that, you know, the network doesn't stand alone. It doesn't, you know, monitoring the network to the exclusion of the virtualization environment or to the exclusion of the storage environment is just ridiculous. And some of that is obvious to, you know, most people working both in the business and just in corporations, and some of it is a little bit more vague. So we've released this. It's a concept and also a bundle called AppStack. It's the, you know, the whole application stack from top to bottom. So at the top of it, you have the application itself, you know, the thing that users are interacting with, and then, you know, descending down through, you have the application server, you have the network that it's connected to, you have the SAN fabric, the storage, the virtualization layer, all of those are mixed in. So as you obtain SolarWinds modules, the details pages will show every piece of the infrastructure that it has insight into. So if you have insight into the virtualization layer, you will automatically see, even if you're looking at an application page, you will automatically see the hardware it's running on, the network devices, you know, that are involved, the virtualization layer, so the host, and also the data store. If you then to that add the storage information, the storage module, then you will also get the storage array, the disks, the array controller, and so on. So that if there's a problem lower down in that stack, you can see from any point in that pillar or pile, you can see all the components from top to bottom. So, you know, let's take a worm's eye view. You're down looking at the storage array, and you're looking at a particular disk. You're actually looking at disk number 127, you know, and you can see that it's throwing, you know, read errors, and you're thinking, okay, fine, I'll replace it tomorrow. But on that page, you will be able to see that it is part of your, you know, customer relationship management tool, which actually generates, you know, $167,000 a minute. That will change the urgency with which you deal with that disk problem.
Right. I get it, yeah. So you're getting a visual look at all of the components that SolarWinds as a framework, if you will, is monitoring, all the different modules that that a customer might be using to monitor their data center, presented on one page from the context of the application. Hey, here's all the stuff in your data center that I know about. Here's the application that relies on this infrastructure, and therefore now you as you said, you get a red light by itself contextually might not mean much to you. Like you said, yeah, whatever, I'll fix it tomorrow. It's just one disk and the array is chugging on, until you realize that there's a performance implication for your biggest cash generating application in the whole thing. And then, yeah, the priority does change indeed.
Right. And this also answers the question that we've been asked by IT pros for a long time, which is, you know, I'm monitoring these things and I'm doing the best I can, but how do I know how this all fits in together? Well, you know, that's the goal of AppStack. It's also the goal of the SolarWinds tools in general to try to give you a single pane of glass, you know, try to give you all that meaningful information. This goes back to what we were saying at the beginning of the show, which is, first of all, giving people the meaningful information, the graphs and the charts. We use NetFlow as our example. Well, NetFlow was really useful, but it was arcane. Once we made the charts meaningful and readable on a wider scale, people realized the value it had, and then they were more eager to adopt it, and that just kept the ball rolling. So, you know, the same thing here. As people can see simply and easily how their components fit into the overall, you know, business goals, they're going to be more eager to, you know, keep it up to date and make sure it's running in tip-top shape, and also know how things are going. And by the way, you know, a lot of pundits have always said that there are no IT projects. There are only business projects with an IT component. But for us IT pros, it's very hard. It's really, really hard to know how that works. First of all, we don't speak business lingo. We just don't. It's almost anathema to us. But also, we got more important things to do. But by being able to see it really drives the point home. And that takes me back to, look at that, wrapped up with a nice neat little bow, the cost of monitoring. Enabling people to...
Let me just pick you up on something there. It's not that... one of the things that I've learned in life is that an engineer can do anything they set their mind to. If there's one thing I know about, you know, most engineering people who are working in IT, is if you want them to be business people, they'll learn how to be business people. If you want them to be VMware, they'll learn VMware. If they want to be, you know, networking experts or Python experts or whatever it is, they will, as a very broad generalization, people will just go and get those skills because engineers are clever people. What mostly they're not being asked to do is to be business communicators. And so what people struggle with, particularly in the technology we have today, is there's no way for us to communicate what we're doing. One of the great things about SolarWinds that I use, and I've sort of been wanting to say this for a little while, is the ability to take the screens that SolarWinds gives you and show the boss what's happening, right? Because if you can point to a chart and say, see that, that's 95% utilization, that's a good thing because of this. But you see this chart here that's running at 10% utilization, that's bad because that means it's out of memory or, you know, whatever it is. Those are the tools that change the way you can communicate. Like trying to communicate a CLI when you're going show interface, you know, utilization, and you get this arcane, you know, syntax on a CLI, that's not useful. It's not something that non-experts can consume. And to me, monitoring is less of an issue as it is the visibility and the analytics about getting data that you can screenshot, drop into a Microsoft Word and email to your boss and say, you see this chart here? This is why you need to drop $500,000 on a, you know, ding-dong upgrade over here. And that's far more powerful than, you know, all those other things that we talked about, dependency mapping and order discovery, they're all great. But when it comes to communication and shaking money out of the budgetary tree, it's those pictures that seem to have this amazing impact on executives and project managers to to give you the support that you need to make things happen. And this is where AppStack comes in, right, is that you're not only seeing what the network's doing, but you're also combining the VMware data with the network and the storage, and to bring all of the goal, all of the monitoring information that you need to be able to say, look, the network doesn't exist alone anymore. The integration between VMware and the apps and the servers, it's all part of an agglomerated whole that runs together. You can't sit alone, and that's where the SolarWinds product has probably got an edge over some of its competitors, is that it has a VM, it has a networking, it has application awareness, it has all these other things that actually lets you bring this end-to-end capability to the table. And that's, you know, that's probably what, out of all the things you've told me today, that's the thing that I'm taking away, is we're now getting this end-to-end capability. What do you think, that's fair?
I agree, although I will say that engineers can be anything they want to, but you have to give them a compelling reason to want to be anything. You know, you have to give them a compelling reason to want to be a communicator to the business.
Because you've got to reduce the resistance too, right?
Right, and I think that...
There's no point in making it, you know, if I've got to communicate with the boss and you just have no shared language, you know, nothing that you can give him that's of meaningful information that he's ever going to understand, guess what? You're going to go, where do I even start?
Right, but, and that's, that, you know, being able to give them, you know, that information, I continue to be horrified by the fact that Leon said so is not a compelling business justification. It should be. I don't understand why it's not.
Yeah, and, I heard it on packet pushes. It must be great.
Right, you know, and I really, you know, but I walk into meetings with the C-level executives, and I'm giving what I think are meaningful reasons, and they're like, I just don't see it. So you're right. Being able to give them, you know, digestible information that tells your story, you know, is huge. And one of those things that I think in the coming years, especially with the convergence and with the Internet of Things and with the growing, you know, both the growing complexity and the simplification of, you know, the network space, we're all going to want and need to get much better at doing is communicating that shared language. So, yeah, I do agree.
Well, Leon, that seems like a really good place for us to end this podcast. So I'll tell you what, would you just once again feel free to tell folks how they can find you on the internet, and if you would, maybe a URL where they could find out more about NPM or AppStack.
Okay, certainly. Once again, my name is Leon Adato, and you can find me both at SolarWinds.com. That's our main site, obviously. You can also find lots of rich information and a whole community of like-minded people for you to share your evenings and weekends and your trials and tribulations and joys on thwack.com. That's just like it sounds, THWACK, thwack upside the head, thwack.com. And you'll find me there as Adato Ali. You can also follow me as Leon Adato. That's all one word on Twitter. And if you want to get information specifically on Network Performance Monitor, and I say that very specifically for a reason, then you would go to www.solarwinds.com/network-performance-monitor. And that would take you right to the page about that. I also want to mention for people who are curious but are thinking, you know, I just don't have any budget to try anything out, all of our products and all of our tools are available for an unlimited, meaning you can put as many devices as you want on it, unlimited 30-day demo. So you can download things, install them on some stuff, and try them out. There's also a live web-based demo. So we try to give people as many ways to try our stuff out before they actually have to sign on the dotted line as we can.
Okay. Yeah. And again, you're going to go up and sign in and then download those trials and off you go. And by unlimited, you mean you can make it run against as many devices as you've got in your network. It's not limited to 5 or 10 devices or something like that.
Right, and it's not feature hobbled or anything like that. It is the full version. It will last for 30 days, and if you throw, you know, 5,000 devices at it, God love you. Go for it.
And the big dependency there is you need a Windows server to provide for this thing and maybe SQL?
It depends on the module. Some of our stuff are appliances. Some of our stuff runs on Windows. The trial version will run with its own copy of SQL Express, so you don't have to have a SQL server. You can, but you don't have to. We try to make that demo as easy as possible to get and to install and to run.
Got it. All right. And Greg, what's top of mind for you this week?
Funnily enough, visibility and analytics. There's I was quite genuine when I said earlier that this year, 2015, is going to be big from all the software vendors who produce visibility and analytics tools. Partly it's driven by, you know, SDN giving us better APIs on the devices, and yes, SolarWinds, you know, will be is positioned to take advantage of those changes. But it's also about this software transition where software can now do so much more than it did just 2 years ago or 5 years ago, that if you looked at all this software 5 years ago, it's time to reevaluate and take a closer look, because the way to extract more out of your network, I mean, if you look at what VMware did for virtualization, basically all they did was put some pretty pictures on it to make it work. IBM's been doing virtualization for 20 years, but nobody bought it because it was too hard to use. And so that's what I think, you know, this NPM, you know, SolarWinds is advancing their product at a very good speed and bringing features to market that you want. They're not going way off into the SDN space where you just lose track of what you look, you know. A lot of customers saying to me, you know, SDN, I don't understand it. I just need better tools to be able to see what's happening in my network.
Yep.
This is where this tool chain is going to come in. So, and as they say, you can go and get a copy, and you've got 30 days to make it do something for you before they want you to get a license. Can't go wrong with that.
How can people follow you, Mr. Farrell?
They can find me on my blog at etheriumind.com and on the Twitters as @etheriumind, where I like to throw out little bits of rotten furry meat for the sharks on Twitter to enjoy.
You've got a new magazine that you just launched, didn't you?
I do. I'm producing a short magazine. It's an email style. It's called The Human Infrastructure, where I'm talking about my personal – it's sort of like taking a personal human view of being in infrastructure, less of the, you know, nerd knobs and feature things, because – there's a lot of stuff going on with that, and it's very difficult to compact that. But what I want to talk about is personal experiences, and I'm just readying the second issue. So if you're interested, head on over to Ethereal Mind. Look for the subscription button on the side of the page, and you can sign up for my infrastructure magazine for free.
And I am Ethan Banks, at EC Banks on Twitter. My blog is ethancbanks.com. And, of course, I have a newsletter, too, called The Hot Aisle, where you can join with several hundred other subscribers and hear about my adventures in the data center, roughly, more or less, the kind of projects that I'm working on and the things that I'm thinking about as I plan through those. And this has been the Packet Pushers podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, @PacketPushers, and we will tweet out to you all of our content, including articles written by our community bloggers. There are folks from all over the world, network engineers, who are writing about things that are top of mind for them, projects they're working on, solutions they've found to problems, and so on. If you'd like to be a community blogger, send us an email to packetpushers@gmail.com, and we'll get you set up. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.